Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the May 3 edition of Commodity Week. The planters still are not moving in the Midwest, but finally there's been some response in Chicago. We'll get some estimates on next Monday's crop progress report and what things might mean for the futures market over the next month or so as we make our way through this edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Dale Durkles from AgriVisor Services, LLC, out of Bloomington, Illinois, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana, and on the phone line, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets. She's in Elkhorn, Nebraska. Our guest in the second half of the program will be Tommy Grassoffi of Indiana Grain out of DeMott, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's open our discussion with this question. Sometimes on the May USDA crop production numbers, they decide to include some information about the coming year and change some yields around. What will they do this year? Dale Durkles.
Your guess is as good as mine. And that's true about every year, you know, when it comes to the USDA. You know, you never really know for certain. And I think with some of the changes they've done on prior reports here, everybody's going to be a little less certain this year. But I think they're probably going to stick with the acreage numbers they had back in March. I don't think we'll see them depart too much because it isn't desperately late in the planting season just yet. And I would venture a guess that they still stick pretty close to trend line yields for both corn and beans.
Bill Gentry?
Yeah, I think that trend line yield for both corn and beans is a pretty important mark to watch. And then as far as the consumption side of the equation, you know, you got to start dialing in, you know, some lower price expectations in general. So your demand base is probably going to drift higher. It'll be interesting to see how they dial those in.
And Elaine Cobb.
Well, I absolutely agree with Bill that they I don't buy the fact that anybody would be switching acres yet, so I would expect to see USDA stick with the same acreage that they had in March. But I think agronomically you can start to make a case for lower than trend line yields, but it's probably not in USDA's modus operandi to do so. They tend to be more conservative with things like that. So I imagine we'll see pretty similar numbers to what we had in March.
Monday morning I had a conversation with extension agronomist from the U of I, Emerson Nafziger. He wanted to know what the average trade guess for the crop progress report was for that day. It was 9%. He emailed me after that and said, well, that was 9%, but that was only if you added last week and this week's number back together because it just jumped up by 1%. Elaine, what do you think we'll see on Monday afternoon?
I'll tell you, then this is not really a big thing for the markets, but something I'm going to be watching to see is to see the South Dakota numbers or the Minnesota numbers, the northern numbers, to actually be higher than the corn planting progress in Nebraska or Iowa or Illinois, which I think I'm going to have to go back on Monday and look at this. That might be the first time in history we've ever seen that, just because they happen to be dry enough to be planting this past week, but it is cold. So again, there's a situation where you're putting seed in the ground that's cold, and it won't emerge evenly, and that can be a yield drag. So you've got a yield drag from that. You'd have anybody who's going in this early, let's say in Iowa or Illinois where it's been wet, they're going to be mudding it in and have sidewall compaction. That's a yield drag. So those kinds of things aren't going to show up in that crop progress number, but I think, it'll be interesting to see how uneven and how weird the progress has been in the northern tier of the Corn Belt versus the southern tier.
Two notes here. On the Tuesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report each and every week, we have the state statisticians from Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Nebraska, and Minnesota. Those are the five top corn-growing states, not in order because I like Illinois best. Well, I'm Matthew O'Bye, right? but they are on, and they always have some interesting things to say, so you can always pick that up on our website at willag.org. That's always in the Tuesday Closing Market Report during the growing season. The other thing is that there has been some corn that's been planted, 5% nationwide, Dale. What kind of condition can that crop be in?
You know, first off, to answer your first question, I talked to a good friend of mine here mid-afternoon that's in Chicago, and he's got some real good connections with a lot of people in the industry, and he seems to think the popular number for Monday on corn is 10 to 12%. He thinks maybe a little higher, but in that. You know, the one thing I go back to, people talk a lot about the conditions early on in here, and I went back and had done a look at some old weather records and stuff and identified 1984 as an interesting year. 1984, on the 29th day of April, we had a major snowstorm across north-central Iowa, southern Minnesota, and dumped 6-9 inches of snow, much like what we just had this week. We were kind of wet over in Illinois. 1984, in the end, we ended up with a yield 2% above trend. So I really question all the anxiety and anxiousness people have at this point in time. It's summer weather that makes the crop.
Who's anxious? Because I have talked to farmers, and the ones I've talked to don't seem to be particularly worried about it. Once they get soils dried out, they think they can go. Is it just the trade in itself that's finding something to do, or what's happening?
Well, I think based on the customers that we've talked to, you know, the guys up in, you know, South Dakota, North Dakota, are kind of chomping at the bit because they've got some wet spots, but they're drying out or they don't have the soil profile. And then you look around in Indiana and Illinois is definitely saturated, so nothing's moving. There's a little bit of apprehension, but they know they can't go. In Indiana, the guys that we've talked to are saying, hey, if I can go, I'm going to get as much in as I can because we're so far behind. I'm going to have a competitive advantage for earlier harvested stuff. And then when you look in over in Ohio, those guys are just taking their regular standard pace. If it's fit to go, they're doing it without any great sense of urgency.
Hey, Elaine, out your way, there's still, when you look at the drought monitor, a problem on the other side or the west side of I-35 that runs from Kansas City up to Minneapolis and through Des Moines. Do you see it in person there or not?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just up in South Dakota last week, and they had a huge snow, not this most recent one that we had, but it melted, and it just absolutely disappeared, like you said, from the soil profile. So it is still dry, and it's going to take a major change in weather before you remove all of the drought anxiety. And I agree that it really depends on what the summer weather will do, whether that drought continues or whether it gets very hot during the critical weeks, because you're absolutely right. We could have late planting, and that could be ideal for yield. But just statistically or agronomically, that's what people expect is past May 15th. And so we're May 15th is going to be 10 days away from Monday. So I'm feeling anxious about trendline yield, and I think that's it's justified. Some risk premium is justified, but it will certainly depend on the summer weather.
May corn this week, a 705 top, low at 649, and settlement price at 699.5, up 55.5. By the way, May last August topped out on the contract at $8.38. Just thought you'd like to know that. That was August 2012. December topped at September, probably Labor Day weekend or thereabouts, at 665. This is the current contract that's trading now, 553.5 was its settlement price for this week, and it was up 29.5 cents.
You know, I looked at something this week. It's going to be out in farm week for those people in Illinois. I was looking at corn planting yields relative to trend, or corn yields relative to trend, relative to timeliness of planting. And the break line was looking at 50% planted by mid-May, in other words, 15th of May. Out of 12 years where we had less than 50% planted by the middle of May, 8 of those had a trend line or above yields, 4 of them were below, and only 2 of those were more than 10% below. So, you know, when you look back at history, planting date just does not matter that much unless you get extremely late, and then you do have issues.
And I think part of the word there is the extreme part, because we've had extreme weather situations over the last couple, 3 years, and the chances of that really settling out and becoming more normal aren't very realistic yet. So we could see extremes in both directions and really cause the crop a lot of challenges. One of the things we're nervous about is even like a late season frost, because we've seen these cold air masses punch down into the U.S. If we get a late crop and it's very, very small, freezing it off would be a lot easier to do.
Well, I think the thing that I'm hearing from everybody is it's not time to panic. It's not time to get desperate at this point. It's not time to think just yet that we've really lost a lot of crop in the field. So the question then is, what do you do with new crop? And we'll start with you, Elaine.
Well, I think that if you're going to be making sales, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to be blowing a bunch of money on long options, particularly when you look at new crop bids that are very strong basis bids that are very strong historically speaking. You know, we are not accustomed to seeing corn basis for new crop this far ahead in time at 15 under or 20 under out here in the Western Corn Belt. So if you're willing to sell a small portion to your local co-op or your local buyer, I think that it's perfectly fine to go ahead and do that with a straightforward contract.
You know, I won't disagree with you. You know, the early sales and just, you know, the near 40 years I've been in the business, the standard practice was, you know, those early sales, unless they were, the basis was horribly wide or unusually wide, we basically did as cash contracts, because then you can kind of hold back and save on margin money for later sales if you want. But when you look at the mix here, it's a day-by-day decision. It looks to me like December corn may have, and I'm saying may have, put in an important low that we're going to get a bounce off of here 2 weeks ago. If we can get it up over the 573, 574 area, I think we'll go up to around 6. If I get up around 6, I'm going to start pulling the plug, and, yeah, it's time to start selling things again.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we've focused our attention to is the revenue per acre change. I mean, when you went home Friday last week, you're basically a lot of people's break even, and now you've got basically another $35 to $50 profit per acre. You need to be chalking the wheels, because if the weather forecast comes in real open next week and all the plants run, and we're going to be right back where we started from.
Soy complex now. Bean futures, May contract, $14.88¾, the high for the late week, the low at $14.25, a settlement price at $14.55. It was up 24¼. You want to know? Yes, I have it. $16.39½ was the high in that contract, came in September. November, $12.21¼, was up 11 cents. And the high in that contract came in September as well. I think there was 5 days difference between these two, $14.09¾. So not quite $2 above where we are at this point, but we have a really, really tight supply of soybeans still.
We do and we don't. You know, and everybody talks about this. We do have high cash basis levels here. We do have what appears to be a very tight supply of old crop beans. Worldwide, we do not have a tight supply, and people have to start to dial that into their equation. I know this last week we had rumors around maybe we were going to import some beans in South America at the end of the week. Those were denied because the boats out of Argentina that were nominated to ship already were supposedly going to either Europe or China. But one thing people have to be aware of is the economics are virtually right there to make imports justifiable. I can load a boat. That boat can be sold to somebody else when it's on water. And people need to always be aware. And I think somebody, if they're going to import beans, are going to be coy until that boat shows up at a port and then everybody's going to get shocked.
Elaine, what's your view of the fundamentals for the soybean market?
Well, we certainly have seen, you know, very stable or very favorable crush margins here domestically. So I don't think there's any reason to expect that situation to change. And with the livestock markets also experiencing sort of a seasonal rally coming, or they seem to be hinting at that, that demand for the soybean meal is likely to stay strong. So, yeah, and furthermore, I would, you know, I don't like to engage in rumors, but there was the CEO of Bunge last week saying that he doesn't think that the U.S. is going to receive those imported soybeans until harvest time, really. So I think it will be very hard. I think it will remain a very scarce or very tight supply and demand situation here in the United States for the next few months.
Well, that would depend on whether he wants to buy U.S. beans really cheap at harvest time or not.
Exactly, right.
Yeah. And I think realistically, when you look at the weather shift that we saw in the overnight maps and the way the spreads behave today, the new crop basically went positive, but the old crop was able to maintain a nickel premium in that spread. So the tightness is being reflected in the market, but the flat price seems to be being trumped by the new crop.
See, the one thing people got to get used to here at this point, the price in Chicago really is not the key price right now. The price in Paranagua or at Rosario is the key price guiding the bean market, and that's the one we need to keep track of on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. And we just harvested a 5.2 billion bushel crop plus.
And what's the price like in those areas?
Spot, we're about 35 under in Paranagua right now. And 35 under the board.
And what does that tell you?
You got a dollar difference between Paranagua and New Orleans. And I'm close to basically justifying the freight cost to get it here.
The question I would say is, what are the chances of, if we get in a tight crunch, and meal seems to be the product of choice, import the meal instead of the beans, because you're going to cut 2 to 3 weeks off of it. You're not going to have to ship them into the United States and crush them. I think that might be a more competitive answer.
Elaine, any final word before we wrap up the first half?
No, I think those guys absolutely nailed it on the head. I would just mention real quick before we forget new crop beans, that price ratio over new crop corn is only 2.2 to 1. So that just goes back to what we were saying about corn planting. Guys not being too anxious about corn yield. Even if they were anxious, you could grow 100 bushel per acre corn and still receive the same revenue as 45 bushel per acre beans at that kind of a price ratio. So I don't see any acres switching personally just because of that price ratio. Nobody's really been bidding that up.
Elaine Cupp, of course, is with MasteringTheGrainMarkets.com. She's out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. Bill Gentry with Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana. And Dale Durkles from AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Indiana. When we come back, we'll talk with Tommy Grisafi of Indiana Grain Company out of DeMont, Indiana.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. This April was the fourth wettest on record for Illinois, with 6.9 inches based on preliminary numbers. That was 3.1 inches above the long-term average of 3.8 inches. We had more rain this April than in May, June, and July combined during last summer's drought in most places. The statewide average temperature for April was 50.1 degrees and 2.3 degrees below average. That is not record-setting, but reflects the fact that we had a lot of cool, cloudy days in April. According to the National Weather Service, a slow-moving, low-pressure system will make its way through southern Illinois on Saturday and Sunday. As a result, we will see widespread rains across all but northeastern Illinois. Potential totals range from 0.5 inches in northwest Illinois to 1.5 inches in southeastern Illinois. After that, the models indicate that the next chance for rain will be at the end of next week. Flood warnings and watches are in place along the Illinois, Mississippi, and Wabash rivers. High temperatures on Saturday and Sunday will be in the 50s where it is raining and in the 60s elsewhere. It will be warmer Monday through Thursday with highs in the 70s across Illinois. Lows will be in the 50s throughout the week. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the May 3 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason from University of Illinois Extension. Our panelists here are Elaine Cubb of MasteringTheGrainMarkets.com and Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC from Bloomington, Illinois, and on the phone line from DeMont, Indiana, at Indiana Grain Company is Tommy Grisafi. He's been on the show before. Tommy, thanks so much for taking the time. I know you spend a lot of time in front of the screens and collecting all kinds of information. What is the best source of information that you think you're able to mine?
Well, there's so much out there. You know, Twitter's been fun.
Right.
It was more fun before the Dodd-Frank laws and rules kicked in. So a lot of the brokers that you would see on there quit talking or, as we say, tweeting. So Twitter was fun. It's not as fun as it used to be. Obviously, you got to go with your gut and your experience. You know, I heard one of the people on the show earlier talk about being in the business for 40 years, and that's worth a lot. And so whatever experience I have in my 20-some years of trading, whether it be good or bad, obviously going with your gut feel. So if you have a position on it doesn't feel right, and obviously the American farmer always has a position on, they're kind of long corn and beans, and obviously if you have animals, you're short, you know, you need to buy that feed. So I always think of the markets and information is not from Tom Grisafi, the trader, but what is the farmer thinking? So I look at the key levels, your $5 puts, your 550 puts, your 450 puts, insurance levels, and then look at how the grain markets are reacting. one of the things one of the people on the show said before we came back was that it doesn't matter what the price is in Chicago. And I so 100% agree with them, and I'd love to argue, but there's no need to when people are so fixated with what's going on at Chicago Board of Trade, and with the cash market trading at such a premium to the board doesn't, in my opinion right now, it's not as important. So when I see farmers in my own backyard market 10, 20, 50,000 bushels, there are such good bids at the local ethanol companies, and out by me we have something called Belstra Milling, real active in the pigs, and they're actually creating that pig adventure next to Fair Oaks. So, you know, if you can grow grain, right now you can sell it. And so those are the things I'm watching as far as information, and I'm watching a lot more of the local cash basis and try not to get too emotionally involved in the prices we see trading at the Chicago Board of Trade.
Tom, this is Dale Dirkholz. Where do you think the farmer's at mentally with the weather that we've had here over the course of really the last 6 weeks now, April being cool and a little damp, and now staying that way and planting really getting off the mark extraordinarily slow? Do you think he's nervous to a certain degree, or do you think he's just starting to get his anxiety elevated?
Well, it depends where you are, and as anyone who's ever traveled across America, you realize that it's a big place. So farmers, I talked to a few friends in Minnesota, they are absolutely pretty scared, freaking out, talking about insurance and prevent crop dates and not getting in the fields for several weeks. Obviously, when you have that much money invested in a crop, you get a little nervous, just like anyone would. These are big numbers these guys deal with. The guys by me in Indiana are fine with it. Ohio, they seem pretty good with it. And some of the statistics that you talked about earlier on the show, I've heard that from various seed dealers, that we can plant this crop May 20th and have really good yields. I think what's more important is the rain. So it depends on your attitude. Obviously, if you haven't spun a wheel yet, you're getting nervous. I talked to some friends in Iowa just a little bit ago, 10,000-acre farm. They have about 14% planted, and it's absolutely pouring rain right now, and they're not going to be in the field for days and days. So America's a big place. People are worried about it. But the one thing I keep thinking about is all everyone was really worried about coming in the spring was that we're going to have another drought, and we're not having a drought. We're actually having cold weather and rain. So if rain makes grain and this keeps up, you know, we might be okay even if the crop goes in late. Anything's possible, so they could turn off the spigot and we can, I'm not a weatherman, I can't tell the future. So everything we talk about is just from our own experience and speculation.
Yeah, one of the things I think is going to be kind of watching, you just mentioned the PP stuff, especially for those northern acres. The ideal planting time for, let's say, southeast North Dakota is May 1st. They've got basically plant dates they can go to the 20th. But if you go to the 20th and you press on, you're running the risk of, you know, a later harvest and having a wet corn in the fall, which I think is going to be an issue for a lot of those guys that don't have the drying capacity. The other one is for us, that if we're a little bit late, we haven't really had to dry a crop for 2 or 3 or 4 years, that could cost you another 20 or 30 cents a bushel to dry it down, and most guys with these margins aren't prepared to pay that.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I'm absolutely shocked about is that when you talk to the American farmer about when they look at their iPhones, and most of them have a BlackBerry or iPhone, they just see that front month of corn. And if you see the May trading above 7, in your mind you think things are okay. But if you see the D's trading at 550 and you know your basis is 30 under and we have potential to grow a big crop, I'm amazed. You asked me, you know, what I'm seeing with farmers and what I'm seeing in the markets. I'm amazed that farmers aren't nervous about the fall price. And the one thing you just mentioned about having to spend extra money to dry the grain and all these other things that can happen, they're not, like, nervous about it. I don't know if they've made so much money, they just have a cavalier attitude, or if they just saw the most recent land auction, you know, that their land's trading up so much that if they don't make money this year, they're like, well, you know, they knew it was bound to happen. But a very cavalier, relaxed attitude, and maybe that comes with having several record years and the power of this new crop insurance and the protection, the farmer getting, you know, more protected through using insurance and other tools. So that's what I'm seeing.
Hey, Tommy, speak for yourself about not having a drought. I'm out here in the Western Corn Belt. But I was going to switch gears a little bit here to go from the farmers and turn back to maybe the speculators. In the commitments of traders report, as of Tuesday, obviously we saw a lot of short covering, a lot of liquidation, but a very small amount of new longs. There really doesn't seem to be a lot of participation. Do you anticipate the fund participation increasing, particularly next week with the May WASD report coming up on Friday?
I don't see the funds in the market, and what I've been told about out west with rain is don't worry about those guys. It rains anytime they want to hit the button and make the sprinklers go on. Now, I don't know how true that is, but that's what Iowa and Indiana farmers like to say about the people out west. But I forgot about that. You guys are still pretty dry out there, and that has to be respected because you grow a lot of grain out there. But as far as fund participation, I don't see the funds. With the Dow hitting 15,000 and the world being a great place, and it seems like everyone's working and making money, not in the world I live in. I mean, the world I live in, I still know people foreclosing on homes. But in the world of the markets and speculation, it's just not as cool anymore to trade corn because there's other things flying around at high prices and more volatility. Not that we didn't have a lot of volatility, but when you take corn off 80 cents in 24 or 48 hours like we did on that last report, every time we have a big move like that, Elaine, you're getting people out of the market that might not come back into it so quick. So we've had such vicious moves, I think actually because we have a lack of liquidity, not robust liquidity, that when we have these vicious moves, more and more people leave the market. So a professional trader like myself, I've traded less this year probably than I've traded in years as far as quantity of corn contracts at the Board of Trade. But I don't get paid to be a market maker or a liquidity provider. So if I own a seat on the exchange and I only trade 10 contracts a day, but I just happen to be lucky or that good and make 5 cents on 10 every day, then that's what I choose to do. Whereas in the old days, there were so many people trading, and with all these robots and all these computers trading, they don't really provide, from the studies I've read and some things that are out there, they don't really provide as much liquidity as one would think. So you see bids and offers, but as anyone knows who goes to execute an order in the futures market, they say it was six bid at seven, I offered fives, and I didn't get them. I don't know where they went. Where'd they go? And that conversation happens over and over. So I see a lack of liquidity in the markets. I don't see the funds in there as much. And I do need to be more respectful about your drought because I did see a weather map today, and you still have yellow and red over there on the drought monitor, and that needs to be factored into the market.
Thank you so much, Tommy, for taking the time with us. Tommy Grishoffy is with Indiana Grain Company. He's out of DeMont, Indiana. Let's get some final words from our panelists, please. We'll start with Dale Durkles of AgriVisor.
You know, I think he mentioned one thing about money and not interested. That's something you've seen over the course of the last 6 or 8 months. Speculative money is leaving the business now. It's not coming in. Rallies will be shorter-lived because of it.
Bill Gentry.
And going back to why the farmers may not have that sense of urgency to sell, is we know that most of the bins are empty. We've got plenty of room. We've had a couple of really good years. Their checkbooks are sitting pretty well. So they can put the crop in the bin and wait for next year's price and hope for a rally to sell.
And Elaine Cobb.
Just to reiterate the idea about the money going away, it seems to be really headed to the stock market. And there was a time when we believed that a higher stock market created wealth and created more demand for real commodity goods, but that does not seem to be the case right now.
Our thanks, of course, to Elaine Cobb, a panelist. She's from Elkhorn, Nebraska, and MasteringTheGrainMarkets.com. Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. And Dale Durkles of AgriVisor, LLC from Bloomington, Illinois. Our guest was Tommy Grishoffy of Indiana Grain Company. He's out of DeMont, Indiana. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can always do that on our website at willag.org. On your smartphone, you can try it at m.willag.org. That stands, of course, for mobile, if the M does, or during the week, if you just want an update of what's happening in the marketplace and you don't have access to the radio or the web, dial this number, 217-333-3434 at about 10:15 and 3:15 each and every business day. Central Time, we update it with some numbers and a bit of analysis. Have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason.